Okay, you are now in the ins and outs of a B&B, and it's how to open a bed and breakfast, a guest house, an Airbnb, a VRBO, and all the above. There she is. There's Cheryl. Hi, Cheryl. We're just now getting started. So welcome.
Hi.
I was just sharing with our audience who we are. And the group is called the ins and outs of a B&B, and it's how to open an actual bed and breakfast or just a guest house, an Airbnb, a VRBO, and everything else that goes with that. There are so many different variables on how you can do this. Now, what I want to clear up, people oftentimes say, oh, I want to open an Airbnb. And what they mean is they want to open a short-term rental. And a short-term rental is kind of encompasses all of that. So whether you rent a room out in your home where you live, and we had a question, can you do it in an apartment? You can. If you got a spare bedroom, you can throw that over on Airbnb and rent it out this weekend if you want to. The only thing that you have to be careful of is what it says in your lease and what it says for zoning in your neighborhood. And so we can kind of get down into the weeds in that a little bit later. But for right now, I want to just give an overview of what we're about. So the ins and outs of opening a B&B, guest house, Airbnb, or VRBO, it's for who? It's for anyone wanting the freedom of extra income or to develop a new career. The what? It's a free online meetup, which you're in right now, helping you with all the ups and downs and ins and outs of opening a B&B and everything that that encompasses. When it's always the fourth Tuesday of each month at 6 o'clock on Zoom. So put it on your calendars. And it's always the same Zoom ID. So if you folks have registered and you've gotten the ID, you can certainly make a note of it. You don't have to register each time. You certainly can. You can just come back in when you see it again and go through the registration. But if you make a note of that Zoom code, it's always the same code. It's always the fourth Tuesday of each month, and it's at 6 o'clock Eastern time for those of you that are coming in from different time zones. And then where you can attend from anywhere you happen to be, it's all online. And why? Because you want more freedom. It's everything you need to know. And how? Just RSVP through meetup.com, or again, click through on the registration, or just plug in the Zoom code when it's time for the meetup. And then this meetup is for anyone who is or wants to be a short-term rental host, from B&B cleaners, even handymen, contractors, short-term rental managers, all are welcome. We want to elevate the short-term rental standards. So that's what we're all about. So now I am going to segue over to Adam for just a moment. And Adam, tell us a little bit about you. He is one of the hosts of the event, and I'll let him give you just a brief background about himself and who he is and what he does.
Sure. So my name is Adam Messmer. I'm with Motto Mortgage. I'm a mortgage broker. So I broker a lot of different non-conventional types of loans. Just for legal sake, my NMLS ID number is 980119. The type, so one of the things that I lend on are Airbnbs, and I have a few different programs that can help with that. And I'll put all my contact information in the chat later. We can lend in most states. Some states are a little weird and they have little restrictions on who can lend there. But for the most part, like Florida, not a problem. And we had a few of them, a few states that I saw. But yeah, we can take a look at that. And typically, even if I can't lend, all us loan officers, we hang out and go to the bar together. And so I've got a buddy that probably can. So I'd be happy to refer you along if need be. And then as far as Airbnb, I own one myself. So we house hack a duplex and we have a long-term renter in that. And then we have a single family home that we bought that we used the equity from the house hack to buy. And that's been doing amazingly well. And that's all here in Columbus, Ohio. So I'm about 20 minutes from Kathy.
Perfect. Yes. And you would think that we would see each other more often than we do, but we see each other on Zoom. Yeah, we do try to meet up in person a couple of times a month, but
I see you every once in a while. We had pizza the other day. It was great.
So we're out and about in the Columbus, Ohio area. That's central Ohio for any folks that are tapping in outside of the country. We did have some folks that registered that are outside of the country. There are 12 folks now listening in the audience. And so please put any of your questions as we go into the chat. I probably won't follow the Q&A and the chat. So just put everything over in the chat and we'll, that way it'll be easier for me to keep track of. Now I'm Kathy Benner and I am the one that created this event. And then Adam, of course, is one of the hosts and I'm the other host. And I too have a guest house. Again, it's short-term rental. And what I did is I have a large home that has 4 bedrooms. And I'm retired now, so I have no children at home. And so I turned 3 of my bedrooms into guest rooms, and I actually advertised those on several online booking sites, channels, if you will. I'm on booking.com, I'm on Expedia, and then I also put the 3 rooms over on Airbnb just to get more exposure because Airbnb is simply an online booking site. A lot of people say, I have an Airbnb. Well, you have a short-term rental and you're advertising it on the Airbnb booking site. Anyway, I'm on several booking sites and then Expedia went out and gobbled up a whole bunch of booking sites. They bought hotels.com. Anyway, on and on and on. And so when I get bookings, from online sites that I've never even heard of before, and they come to me through Expedia. And what I've discovered is Expedia, they are now the largest online booking site because they gobbled up a bunch of these smaller online booking sites. And so when I look at my percentages, and I'll just toss it out there, and we're going to talk to Cheryl here in a minute and find out what she's doing. But when I look at my percentages, a large percentage of my client base is coming to me through Expedia because they have such a large footprint these days out there online. And the guest is kind of like, no, I booked through hotels.com. Well, actually, you know, Expedia owns you now. So that's how it gets to me. So anyway, there's all kinds of things we're going to talk about with Cheryl. I can't wait to get started. Cheryl Hewitt, she has a property called Tally Haven. Did I say that correctly, Cheryl?
You did.
Tally Haven. It's a winter getaway 2 miles from Nordic Mountain in Wild Rose, Wisconsin, USA. I had to jump over and take a peek and wow is all I can say. 3 living rooms, 6 bedrooms, 3 bathrooms. You can bring the whole family together comfortably. You can learn about Cheryl's background before she opened Tally Haven. We're going to talk to her about that, how she found this perfect property and how she handles the day-to-day task of keeping all of those guests happy. So, wow, I want to get started. So Cheryl, give us a little bit before we jump into the actual short-term rental conversation. What is your background? What is your history? How did you get to here?
Okay. So, I've covered a lot of different things in my years. Right now, for the last 20 some years, I've been a application programmer and I work for the state of Wisconsin. And after 20 some years of that, I'm pretty exhausted with it. I want to have some freedom. I want to kind of control some things and I'm not terribly interested in a 9-to-5 office setting anymore. I've been there, done that. And so I grew up in a resort area, Chautauqua, okay. Wisconsin. I don't know if anybody's heard of it, but it has a chain of lakes and there's probably like 50 resorts. Like, wow. You can't swing a stick without hitting one, right? So that was very familiar to me. I just love real estate. Like, I'm ridiculous. I have so many different searches going on, like Zillow and Redfin, and people will be like, how did you find your place? And I'm like, Lordy, I know everything that's for sale in Wisconsin, you know, yep. Pretty much. I mean, I just cover it.
I get it too. It's my hobby. I'm on Zillow and Trulia every day. Another little bit of background for those of us that are kind of in the short-term rental lane, if you will. I just bought a condo that came with a long-term tenant, but it's, I know she's trying to move because we were told that before we bought the condo that she wanted to move down to the Carolinas. And so as soon as she does that, I'm going to turn her condo into a short-term rental for visiting nurses because it sits right in the middle of Columbus with all of these amazing hospitals all around. And so I'm going to turn that into a short-term rental. And then Mark and I just bought a property down in Hocking Hills, which is kind of our touristy area here in Central Ohio. And we haven't even had a chance to rehab that one yet. That one is just 2 weeks old. We just bought it. So I get it. And then I have a condo in Sarasota. I was sharing with someone on the call that's in Florida. And we have and Adam will get this, we have a particular mortgage on that one that says we can't short-term rent it until we've lived in it for 24 months. And then after 24 months, because of it's like an owner-occupied loan, vacation property loan for owner-occupants only. And after 24 months, then we're allowed to rent it out. But in Florida, the area that we're in has a zoning requirement that says short-term rentals have to be for at least 30 days or longer. And so, but that's perfect because we're on the West Coast, right in Sarasota, on the Gulf of Mexico, and we could rent to snowbirds and they all want to rent for, you know, 2 months, 3 months. And so that's not going to be an issue. So once we've had it for 2 years, we'll rent it out. So at some point I'll have four.
That's
so
exciting.
Do you have more than just the Tally Haven?
No, I just have Tally Haven so far.
Okay.
So I bought that house. I closed October 2nd of 2020. And then we started a renovation. So we didn't have our first guest till like February 2nd of this year.
Okay.
So I'm a newbie.
I love it.
Yeah. So it needed a lot of renovation.
Was it already a short-term rental when you bought it, or was it someone's home? No. Or
it was somebody's vacation home, and they had built the home. It was built in 1990. It is 30 years old, and they lived in Illinois and came up for, you know, vacation times. They had five sons.
Okay.
Thus, the six-bedroom house.
Okay, and, I get it.
And I think that these were all grown children with spouses and grandchildren. So downstairs they had, the kids, when they saw it, our kids were like, oh my God, that's like a barracks. So they had taken this long room and divided it in two and had this like temporary wall in between and homemade bunk beds. So there were four bunk beds in each room and it was very unappealing.
And
one of them didn't even have a window. So it wasn't safe. So we converted that to a game room. And, you know, I was tempted to put some bunk beds in there, you know, more adult style with the stairs between them. But at a certain point, I didn't want that many people in my home at once. And I also didn't want to wear out cleaners because bunk beds are really hard. And that's probably what I kept hearing was that's the least favorite thing. And so we went with the game room. And I am so glad that it's just a game room and not another six bunk beds.
So. Well, and I get that. And again, once you're in the business and you start to see what it takes to clean one of these in between guests, and sometimes you have a quick flip where you've got somebody checking out, somebody else checking in, and all of that does come into play. And so for all of you newbies that are on this call listening to us, these are all the things that you kind of learn by just rolling up your sleeves and getting in there because it looks good on paper. But then when you have to finally do it, flipping six bunk beds would be quite the chore. Carmela says she's wanting to do an Airbnb in their home in Maryland. She said, however, should she do it as a short-term rental instead? Carmela, again, Airbnb is just an online booking site. You're doing a short-term rental if you do an Airbnb. Airbnb is just the booking site that you would advertise your short-term rental on. So you can just use Airbnb, and a lot of people do that, and that's where that phrase comes from, that I have an Airbnb. What they really mean is they have a short-term rental and they're advertising it on Airbnb. So, but you can advertise it on as many channels as you want, depending on your zoning. Terry says, with mine, when I said I had to live there or, you know, for 24 months. She said, so for the first 24 months, was it a vacant or was it your second home? It's our vacation home. Just like Cheryl is explaining, this property she bought was the vacation home of the previous owner. And Adam can maybe clarify, there's different mortgages.
Well, I had a question for you because you mentioned it was a provision of the mortgage that said that you had to do that for 24 months. But I was curious, was it a, I thought, because we've talked about it before, I thought it was a provision in the HOA that said you could buy, but you had to use it for so long. But it is the mortgage?
It is the mortgage because we actually took out a mortgage for a vacation, owner-occupied vacation property. And I got a lower down payment, just like an FHA.
Was it a conventional loan or was it something like weird?
It's something weird. It's for owner occupants second home. And it was a certain product just for that. And one of the criteria is that you couldn't use it as an investment for the first 24 months.
That's neat.
Yeah. Huh. So that answers your question. So we bought it. It was vacant when we bought it. We've been using it as a vacation property. So that'll help that. So Cheryl, how did you decide that you actually wanted to do this particular property or get into short-term rentals? Is it because you grew up around all of those resorts? And
I think that had an influence. And I co-owned a home that I had lived in with my now ex-husband. And we had decided we wanted to move into Madison. We're in Lodi, Wisconsin, just north of Madison, but the youngest had gone off to college and we wanted to move down to Madison. So we decided to rent that home, long-term rental. So we did that and then we divorced and we still own this house together.
Okay.
And we did that for like 7 years, which was fine. So I was looking at real estate and, you know, as one
your hobby.
Yep. And I talked to a mortgage lender. I went to Guild Mortgage and he was like, well, you know, the house you have that you already own really is not cash flowing. So it doesn't look good on paper. And the reason for that was I had tenants that I loved that really couldn't quite afford that house. However, mm-hmm. he was a carpenter. And so I got a lot of renovation as a part of a way to barter, you know, extra, you know, so that if they couldn't meet the rent, especially in the winter for him, they would do things like, oh, you know, put in a bathroom and finish off and add, you know, more rooms in the basement and, you know, just put in a new sliding door. So things were happening for me that made it worth it. But on paper, that just didn't translate and help my debt to income. You know, that's right. A key factor to look at, like, oh, can you afford another property? That kind of thing. And so we sold that house and then I started looking around for what can I do? We had already been renting, for vacation, the short-term mm-hmm. rentals. And we had stayed at a place in northern Wisconsin that summer that we just loved it. So it was, you know, COVID, our first COVID summer. And we felt like our safest bet was to rent a whole house and be there, mm-hmm. you know, so hotels didn't feel safe to us. And when we vacation, there's usually more than just us, you know, we're going with friends. So we needed a big space because there's like 5 teenagers, 4 were boys, 1 a girl. You know, teenagers don't like sharing.
and they travel in packs.
Yeah.
They love friends.
ironically, now that I have Tally Haven, the kids have, you know, gotten older and they don't go with us as much, but we go with friends. It's still great. Like we had an adult spring break. And if you haven't done that, I highly suggest you do. It's quite lovely.
Perfect. That's perfect. Yeah. Now you mentioned your debt ratio. So Adam, jump in here and explain debt ratio for some of our newbies that are maybe just looking to purchase and they're thinking, oh, what is that real? I don't really understand what that means when it comes to purchasing.
Yeah. Yeah. So debt to income ratio, or DTI, is a calculation that your lender is going to use to determine your lendability. And basically what it is you're going to take your gross annual income and you'll divide by 12, and that's your gross monthly income, right? Then you're going to take all of your liabilities, and your liabilities are things that appear on your credit report. So minimum payments on stuff, minimum payments on credit cards, minimum payments on car payments, student loans, et cetera. They're going to add that along with the PITI, which is the principal, interest, taxes, and insurance of the new mortgage, PITIA, in case there's association fees, that also gets lumped in to the liabilities. And you're going to compare those two in the form of a ratio. And basically, you want your total DTI, including your current housing payments and any future housing payments and all your liabilities, to be less than roughly 50%, 48, really 48%, but 50 is a round number to use. Now, here's the thing. There are other loans that are investor friendly, that are sweet, that I sell, that are the best. And they're called DSCR loans, and they're debt service coverage ratio loans. And what these do, rather than looking at your personal income, they look at the performance of the investment. So they look at the income of the property, the expenses of the property, and we don't even look at your personal income. So if personal income is an issue, that shouldn't stop you from exploring this opportunity. For loans of that nature, you're going to need at least 20% down. And typically you'll pay points in origination. Points in origination are a cost that's added on to the closing cost. And one point is 1% of the loan amount. So you're going to pay 20% down. And typically rates are going to be, we could talk about rates offline, but there's a whole range. Mm-hmm. So it's exciting though. But I mean, these things, and what these lenders are looking for in the debt service coverage ratio, so the income versus the expenses, they want your total expenses. Expenses being your PITIA. So that's the only expenses that they're looking at. They're not looking at if you have a manager or what your vacancy rates are. So it's very easy. You just find out what is your mortgage payment going to be, and then are you going to make 120% of that in Airbnb or in income, where whatever it is. So in other words, a debt service coverage ratio of 1.2 or 120% of your mortgage payment. As long as you're meeting that, then, and you've got like a 720 credit score, then I've got a lender that can lend on Airbnb. And this lender, the other thing they do is they use AirDNA's website, which, mm-hmm. if you haven't heard about that, maybe we'll get into that in a little bit, but it's a projection website that you can put in an address and find out how much you can make on Airbnb, which is sweet. And they'll use that for income, which is amazing to me. But, and they give that a 30% haircut, and then they do the ratio thing, and that's the gist.
Adam, can I ask you a question about that?
Yeah.
So in Wisconsin, where I'm at, AirDNA is not the best tool, but like Price Labs is better. So does your mortgage, lender, broker, whatever, they also look at other pricing tools?
I think they're open to it. AirDNA is just the one that we've used in the past, but if it's not giving accurate results in a given area and there's a comparable service that's going to give a more accurate representation, then totally. But these Airbnbs, they kill it on the DSCR ratio. Typically, like I said, you want to be at a 1.2, but we see them coming in at like 1.75 or 2. In other words, 200% of your mortgage payment, you get an income, which is mm-hmm. bananas, is the technical term. That's bananas.
Technical terms.
But so they'll use the calculation websites, but there's a lot of different lending options. Mm-hmm. And that's the other, there's all kinds of weird stuff that you can do that's interesting and can get something done. But typically you need some money. You need a little bit of money.
Yes.
And you can, One other thing, just on the lending tangent, and then we can get back into everything. Because I'm curious, because I got questions for Cheryl, but you can use a home equity line of credit to buy a house. Like, that's what I did. So I bought a duplex, this duplex, in 2013, when you could get duplexes for cheap, and then it appreciated 200%. And we used that in the form of a line of credit as the down payment on our Airbnb. And then we just got a 30-year mortgage. So we came out of pocket like a couple of grand to just to put it into a business checking account. So that there was some money there to pay the bills. And it's life changing. It's wild. But anyways, Cheryl, I'm curious.
Great.
So
great stuff. Go ahead.
Time. How much time do you spend on Tallyhaven? And maybe we talked about that, but I might've missed it.
So my time is basically messaging with guests and maybe promoting the property. I have the world's best cleaner who is darn near my partner. Like, she does so much for me. And so if I need something handled there, because I'm an hour and 40 minutes away, I can count on her. I reward her handsomely.
Yeah.
Because she's so important. And anybody out there, if you're getting into this, that's the most important person in your life. They
is
are
your cleaner.
Cold. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. That's yeah. fair.
Treat them well. So it really doesn't take a lot of hours, and it'd be hard for me to really quantify. Like, I sit at a computer all day long. That's my job.
Yeah.
And it doesn't take long to dash off a reply to somebody, right? So not a lot of time. On a daily basis, one property is not going to take a lot of time.
Mm-hmm. So you said one property doesn't take a lot of time.
I don't think so.
So maybe a couple hours a week if you were to spread it out. Because it's not like you're sitting, it's like time to clock into Airbnb now Airbnb. And do that. Right. Like, because it's texting and it's, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like to go in and zhuzh my listings on the various OTAs, change a title or change your description or wiggle around a few prices up and down here and there. Because I believe it keeps you higher in the rankings because search engines crawl your listing then. So I do that. That only takes a few minutes. It's just a daily, basic little thing, and you get used to it. You can even just like have some canned stuff. Like, maybe you have 15 different titles that you put in, and they almost all say the same type of thing, but you can change them for whatever season you're starting to market for. So right now I'm still saying like book your ski weekend or your ski getaway, because I'm 2 miles from a ski resort, a ski hill. And I get maybe a little later in the season, I'm going to totally be pushing for summer bookings because I'm on a lake. I'm hitting summer people, tourists, and the winter getaway. I did not realize that this little ski hill that I'm 2 miles door to door from was going to be such a bonus. I was focused on the lake. I grew up with lakes. I mean, you go to go boating, right?
That's so cool.
But guess what? Skiing is fantastic. And I feel a little slow on this, but it didn't occur to me that people go skiing as in groups. And my house is really for a group. I'm expensive and they need to pool their money because I'm hitting like between $700 and $900 a night, especially on a weekend.
Yeah.
And I didn't think I could pull those kind of numbers in the winter. But
how many does your property sleep?
14.
14. Oh man, that's cool.
That's
kind
cool.
of the name of the game. Wouldn't you agree, Kathy? Like, how many butts can you get in the seats? How many heads can you hit and put on pillows?
I mean, I could add sofa sleepers or, things like that and put more people in. But I think 14 is very comfortable.
Yeah.
I have one bed per bedroom. And then I have a futon that's actually really comfortable in my game room. So nobody's like double bunked and, you know, trying to sleep with somebody else breathing next to them that they're not comfortable with, you know?
Yeah.
That kind of thing. So I like that aspect too. And I did that more for my own sake when I was property hunting, because this is it's our vacation home also. So I did a second home / vacation mortgage. That's the kind of lending I got, and we definitely do use it ourselves.
Yeah.
So, now what's your occupancy currently? Are you staying pretty full?
My summer was 100% booked. My fall.
Yay.
It's That's hard awesome. Because I'm on different OTAs. So, and I really should pull all these numbers together overall. I think on a year basis, I'm probably around 50%. Because in the winter, my weekdays are mostly open. You know, I don't get a lot of bookings in, but I book my weekends up. And I'm okay with that because, you know, you can either like price for occupancy, or you can, you know, so that maybe your rates are lower and you're getting a lot of bookings. Mm-hmm. Some people like that a lot. And, or you can make that same amount of money by charging more and just expect that not as many people are going to book and there's going to be, you know, something to pull them there. Well, my pull is that ski hill and the ice, you know, the lake. Can you guys hear my cat? It's trying to get in the door.
No, go get go let the cat in. That's fine. That's totally.
Oh, it's a giant.
I got
cat.
Two cats. There was one that was like showing off behind me a minute ago, but real quick, we got a couple questions in here. Gabriella was wondering, are you able to have a healthy profit net profit every month, and how long until you were able to make a net income on your properties? What do you think about that, Cheryl?
So I need to probably hit, because gas can be kind of high, you know, LP gas to heat it. I like to hit like $3,600 a month to make sure I've covered everything. Mm-hmm. And I have done that every month, probably except for this last November. April was also slow for me. So April, November, and you know, this is my first year in, so I'm kind of, you know, learning what the rhythm will be for me. People are holding off in the spring for their summer vacations. There's mm-hmm. just, you know, they if you're in Wisconsin, you live for the summer, most of us. and then in the, you know, so they kind of, you know, have waited, but the fall is gorgeous and I got a lot of people. I would have gotten more except for my lake board voted to do a drawdown in conjunction with the DNR. So we did a 6-foot drop to like invasive weeds and to compact the sediment in the lake. It's not a very big lake. I'm used to bigger lakes. So they did that, and you know, and it impacted my business, mm-hmm. but you know, they'll raise the levels again in May, maybe April, May, and you know, we'll have our summer back, but I'm kind of missing out on ice fishing this year, but the ski
because
people,
of the lake thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
The skiers will pull me through. So yeah, I think that I almost always, except for November, hit totally, you know, it covered my expenses. December's been wonderful. And yeah, it.
So I go ahead, Kathy. Go ahead.
Well, Angie wants to know, what is your laundry process for that many beds?
Well, I replaced my washer and dryer this summer because the dryer started making a racket, and that was one of the few things I hadn't replaced when I renovated the house. So I gave those to my cleaner because she had a need. So if she can't get it done at my house in that amount of time, she takes laundry to her house. And sometimes she'll actually go to a laundromat and I will, you know, compensate there. I bought these giant bags off of Amazon to transport laundry to and from. Okay. And she really likes them. They're easy to, you know, handle. They have handles for it. It's pretty much what they're made for. And she's just, you know, really a godsend and yes. does this. And I have, you know, offered various things to help with that. But one weekend I was showing up there, you know, I was the person coming and she's like, oh, I still have towels in the, or sheets in the dryer. And I was like, I'll get them. Oh my God. You know, I don't like folding sheets. That's what I discovered. I sent her a message. I'm like, you don't make enough money. Like, why do you have this occupation? This sucks. She's yeah. just laughing, you know, because yeah, that is why I have her. So I really appreciate her. And this maybe spring, I want to renovate one of my two bathrooms downstairs. And I was going to take that one out and just make it a sauna because I have two bathrooms back to back, but I'm going to keep it a bathroom and I'm going to put in another set of washer and dryer.
Okay. There's plenty of space. How did you find your cleaner? How did you find her?
It was through Facebook and I think it might have actually been Marketplace. Okay. Or I went to like for that area for that county has a buy sell, you know, group.
Yeah.
And I posted there. So she had never cleaned short-term rentals and she was just starting up her business. I think it'd been maybe a month she'd been on her own doing this. I think she'd been a dental assistant mm-hmm. or something like that before that. Anyhow, so she started her business and she, you know, I interviewed her and I was like, so what's your rate? And she's like, you know, kind of hesitant and being like, oh, $20 an hour. And I'm like, okay, so this is going to sound really weird, but that's not enough. And, you know, she was just shocked. But, mm-hmm. And then I told her why it wasn't enough. You know, like she had no idea the differences between cleaning a short-term rental and a private residential home. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so when I laid it out, I'm like, I'm going to ask so much of you. And so I don't do a per hour rate because if she can get out of there sooner and you mm-hmm. know hit all the stuff, I'm not going to penalize her on that, right? So I pay $275 a cleaning, you know, and I think that that's really fair. I mean, she needs to make a livable wage. Mm-hmm. She also now has hired employees and she cleans a lot of short-term rentals now. But the best thing about this was after, you know, I hired her, we had that meeting and she went home and she told her husband, Cheryl will be my top priority because she respects me.
Mm-hmm.
Like people, you really need to do things like that so that they, yes, respect them. They are so important to you. And
yes,
that was what I was hoping. And it really has benefited me more than I ever could have guessed. It just
totally.
Yes.
Yeah.
I get that. Yolanda wants to know, are there mentors who can walk us through the first property purchase, finishing, and set up on Airbnb site? And yes, I can help you with that. Just connect with me at kathybenner.com. You can click through there and schedule a call with me, and we can set up a schedule on how to connect. I think she's going to go get her cat.
Yeah, the cat is dying. Yep. He's trying to come in.
I get it.
They're in Wisconsin. They probably got like 10 feet of snow, right?
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe. There, yeah. Kitty.
Oh, that's a cute cat. You're yeah. cute, buddy.
This is Max, and he's a Maine Coon. And yeah, he's not going to want to sit on my lap.
He's adorable.
He pretty much turned and walked away as soon as I opened the door. He just wanted the door open. So.
So I, one of the things that is kind of simmering here.
Listen, now, how did you find that perfect property? Did you look at zoning first to make sure you could do what you wanted to do? And then you bought, or did you buy it and then check out zone? What was the order that you did when you're getting the property?
I'm trying to recall for exactly. I think I saw the property on Zillow. Then I, you know, like what county, what township. I reached out to the county to ask them, you know, what's what? Because, yeah, it would have not been a go. Couldn't have gone forward without the proper zoning and, you know, licensing and all that. I didn't want to do anything that wasn't above board.
Right.
So, yeah, it all fit. I was kind of nervous, like, what would my neighbors think? So we were pretty mum about that as we were renovating. But again, I got super lucky. I have wonderful neighbors. And this summer when I was up there in August, they took me for a ride on their pontoon. And while we were on this ride, they were like, you know, we were pretty nervous about having, you know, renters or, you know, guests over there. And they've like, you know what? They've been great. Mm-hmm. You're renting to families, and yeah, that is the type of place I have. It's families for the most part. And, or I've had, you know, older ladies that just do a girl's getaway, and mm-hmm. they were pretty hilarious. I think they were my heaviest partiers. but my neighbors were like, it's been great. They're like, last weekend you had a couple families there and grandpa and grandma, and they set up a whole bunch of hammocks up and down. Like, I have this steep hill. Oof. Anyhow, down to the lake. And these kids had all these hammocks, like 3-4 hammocks going down the hill, you know, across. And they're like, you could just hear kids laughing and playing. And yeah, and that just was bringing them joy. So again, super lucky on that. But yeah, the zoning was correct. But even with good zoning, you do have to worry about your neighbors, you know, and that's so important. And I am really lucky. You know, we've done things to try to make sure we have a good relationship with our neighbors. For one example is I don't have regular garbage pickup there. The township doesn't offer it.
Okay.
And it's actually on a private road. I didn't even realize we have things that are just private roads and maintained by that group of people. That's the situation. So I have a small dumpster on my property now to handle, you know, my trash. And I just told my neighbors, you can use that whenever you want, you know, just go ahead.
Ooh.
You know, so that's an advantage to them too.
Want to talk about a couple things real quick. So one thing is that you really hit the nail on the head is dealing with the neighbors. I have a client that has an Airbnb, and it is so cool. It is like this, it's this cabin out in the woods, but cabin is like not even worth, I'm not even doing it justice. There is a musician of a well-known band, and he like made this house and built it to like live in, and it's sweet. It's so cool. It sleeps like 20 people, and it's phenomenal. There's like an outdoor living area, and it's just so cool. Anyways, his neighbors hate it. They hate that he uses it as Airbnb. And long story short, technically there was an ordinance against it in the township. And so the neighbors ended up shutting him down.
Wow.
But bribing them with free trash pickup is genius. Cause also that bribe is probably tax deductible. I'm not an accountant, full disclosure, but like, you know what I mean? That's cool.
Yeah. It's worked really well, and they've been fabulous neighbors. And, the property I bought was not really maintained by the family that owned it for 30 years. Right now we have oak wilt happening. I don't know if that's in Ohio too, but
what is that?
It's a disease that oak trees can get. And I think they pass through the root system. So I needed a bunch of trees down. My neighbor happens to work with somebody who also has a side business. He's an arborist. And get this, the man's last name is Cedar.
That's great.
That's so funny. So I hooked up with him, but you know, we were even there on Sunday meeting with the arborist again this year, and both of us, my neighbor and me, are like, okay, this tree is really leaning towards your property. We don't want it to fall onto your land. we'll take that out. I mean, we had some going both ways. Mm-hmm. You know, that's good neighbors, you know, and you just want to nurture those kind of relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And that zoning, like what you, your story with the guy having a fabulous party, property, but not quite, you know, being able to run it because of the ordinances.
So let me share the solution that he found, because this is another way that you can do short-term rentals that people don't normally think of. So he was contacted by an insurance company and they're like, hey, you have this fully furnished, beautiful house. Can we rent it for like it was like $6,000 a month or something. And he's like, and they went it for 6 months. He's like, yeah. That is within the ordinance. That's allowed in the ordinance. And why was this insurance company? Is because they needed someplace to put people whose homes had burned down and they needed to store them somewhere, the people, until their house was rebuilt. And so if you can establish relationships with some of these insurance companies, because most landlords that have nice luxury properties don't necessarily want short-term rental and all the headaches that come with it. So if you do have something that's really nice and you are experiencing a lull in your bookings, mm-hmm. That might be another way to fill out your calendar.
Yeah. I know that the seller's agent for the property that I bought, he let me know. He's like, sometimes I have people that want to rent for a full month, you know, like summertime. Huh. My rates are just way too high. I want to make $6,000 a week.
Yeah.
You know, nobody wants to pay that kind of money for a month, that nobody I know of at least. But there are many different ways to approach this. And it's kind of like a midterm rental, you know, it's not really, mm-hmm. I would think short term is usually under 30 days, but midterm, yeah, there's a whole niche right there.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. How did you decide what online booking sites to get on? And once you got on those booking sites, do you have a channel manager or do you keep chasing all of those booking sites to make sure you don't double book?
I do have ownerreservation.com. I haven't fully integrated it all, but it does sync my calendars, which I could probably sync them without that. Syncing calendars is pretty simple. I have toyed with the idea of like just simply paying, I think it's $400 to have OwnerRes fully integrated all. And, you know, so that it'd be one to rule them all, right? And so that you load your photos there, all your bookings come through there, all your communication. I should be utilizing that. I think I pay like $50 a month and I'm underutilizing it, but that's something I'm gonna tackle this winter. And I've kind of held off because my partner, my life partner, he's a software engineer and he'd probably be like, you paid somebody to do this. And whereas I'm a programmer too, but I'm the worst at installing stuff. Like these are different things, but he has a real aptitude for it. So I've held off and yet I still haven't asked him to help me with it because I just am foreseeing this can be frustrating. But that's crazy. I need to integrate that. Then I want to hook up Price Labs. And I am on, right now, I'm just on Airbnb and VRBO, and I have a Haufi listing. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Haufi, but it's a free platform, but you have to promote it yourself. They don't do advertising. So I pimp it out on like some Facebook groups that are like for Wisconsin and Minnesota and Wisconsin that for people to, you know, with rentals, they post there, people who are looking post there. So it's a great spot to post. And I was super interested, like you found Expedia brings in so much for you. Do you think it's because, you have more traveler type guests because it's a shared home?
I do. I have a lot of pass-through guests. They're just traveling from point A to point B and they mm-hmm. just want to stay a night or two. And so we're often not the actual destination. We're just a place that they need to stop over midway on their drive. And so they're finding us on Expedia, and we fill most weekends. And I do have last minute bookings. And so I get concerned about double booking. I wouldn't want two sites out there showing these rooms available and having somebody book, you know, within 2 or 3 minutes of each other the same room and find out that I've double booked. So I actually, for those of you that are listening, I actually use a channel manager called CloudBeds. And my CloudBeds allows me to connect as many channels as I want to the CloudBeds platform. And CloudBeds only runs $124 a month for me. And it includes a whole front office program as well. So Carmela asked a question about, do you recommend having blackout dates? In essence, do you rent during a particular time period? And so for me, let's say that I don't want to rent for a particular time period, I want to block out those or black out those dates. I can actually go to my CloudBeds and type those dates in that I want to block, and it pushes them backwards out to all those channels and blocks all the channels in real time. And so that works really well for me. So that's the program I use. But there's a ton of them out there. Yeah, and we can explore all those. There's a lot of channel managers out there. It's whichever one. My option always is choose the one that you're going to use. If it's something that's too complicated and you find you're not using it, then it's really not doing you any good. So choose one that's easy enough for you, whatever your skill level is, that you will actually use.
Do you take advantage of doing scheduled messaging to your guests?
And
your platform, that manager, I would guess, it plays a big role in that, correct?
Yes. I have all of my templates in there, my welcome letter, my check-in letter, my check-out letter, my thank you for choosing us letter. All of that is automatically put into templates right in my CloudBeds. And so when the guests come in, I just click a button and it sends whatever letter I want to send them. And I don't have to do all of that typing, you know, each time.
Yeah. I really like having scheduled messages.
Yes. Yes. I love that. So describe to me your check-in process, because you're not close. So you're not driving over there and actually meeting your guest and getting them checked in. So describe to me your check-in process.
So I have a smart lock, you know, that people can enter a code, and I can set that new codes up via my phone. I use their last four digits of their phone number that they've used on whatever platform. And I have a feeling that I always state that it was the number they used on there, because sometimes people forget what they've used for a phone number. But so that I can schedule the days and time, you know. So, and I can also set up notifications. So I will often set up a notification like for that first day, to make sure they get in. It's amazing with the smart lock. So it has a fingerprint thing and it has code numbers. So you have to wake that screen up. I mean, so one or the other, right? People have never been to my place, try to use their fingerprint.
And you're like, okay. And you're like, what makes you think I would have your fingerprint?
That's awesome.
Right. And then we have a Ring doorbell. And so if they push the doorbell, our Alexa here in Madison says, somebody's at the Tally Haven door. And we tell them that if they want to talk to us direct, they can do that. And sometimes that is what's happening. They need assistance. So I'll often, because people don't realize, even though I've sent them instructions with images on how to wake up that screen, because it looks black and you can't see any numbers, you know, you touch it or put your hand up against it, things like that, they still will get caught up on, what do I do? Mm-hmm. So I love the Ring doorbell. Also, if they do ring that doorbell, it turns on the carriage lights on each side of the door. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's nice for them. They can also, you know, use a regular switch inside, but, you know, that's instant lighting for them. I have one Ring camera that points at the driveway. So when I first started, like, you know, I'm such a mom. I'm like, people, I'd be watching for them to pull in.
I know.
I was all the notifications like, oh, there went a leaf, you know, watching for them to come in. And I'd be like, oh, I hope they're going to have a good time. You know, like I really love hosting and I like, you know, even hosting people in our home for dinner parties and stuff like that. And so I just really want everybody to have the best time. And so I was pretty nervous on that. And I just like, oh my God, I'm such a mom. Because, you know, you just want to be, you kind of want to be there. I would not want a host meeting me personally. I'd be like, please. But my nature is to be like, I want to do everything for you. So now I don't really watch my cameras, but I have them there. I can turn them on and look at the driveway, like, has it snowed? Yeah, right. Things like that. On my lake side of my property, I don't have a camera. We've bought one because we thought, you know, maybe we should be able to watch the fire pit that we put in so they don't burn down the neighbor's house. But I just don't want to, I just don't want to do it, you know? I'm trusting people. I want them to have some privacy and I'm not hovering around my cameras, but, you know, they're there on vacation. I'm trusting they're smart adults.
I have a camera just on my front door because I want to make sure that guests get in, because here in Columbus, Ohio, it can get pretty cold. And so I just want to make sure that the guest isn't stuck out there trying to figure out the door code and they, you know, and they've hit the wrong button and the wind's blowing. And and so that way, if I see they're struggling, I can make sure that I connect with them and say, let me help you get through the door in case we're not here. Because once I get my rooms ready to go, we go to dinner. We do whatever. I go out with Adam. You know, we're just out and about. And so, like you, my camera gives me a notification that my guests have arrived, and then I just kind of peek long enough to make sure they got through the door okay, and then they're on their own.
And, you know, and I'm looking to go. Yeah, they're parked on my drain field that I asked them not to. There's not the best space for parking. And so that's where they end up. And I'm just going to keep my fingers crossed that they don't ruin my septic.
Now, Jacqueline, she asked me, how did I get a condo in Florida when I don't live there? And early on in the conversation, I shared that we actually bought the condo as a vacation property for ourselves. And we are not short-term renting it yet. Because the loan, the mortgage requires that we use it as a vacation property for the first 24 months. And then the HOA requires that when we do use it as a short-term rental, we have to rent it for at least 30 days or more. And our plan is to try to rent it once a year in that January, February, March period to a snowbird, and then for us to use it the rest of the time. So that's the plan. So we'll see how that works out. Adam mentioned his insurance. Somebody wanted to know insurance. I'm with State Farm. Adam is with Travelers in Cincinnati for his long-term rentals. Cheryl, what insurance company
I have auto owners. They were pretty much the only one we could find other than like proper. And that's a Cadillac of it, but you're paying champagne
it's a lot.
Prices. Yeah.
You do pay more for short-term rental insurance. I would recommend getting with an insurance broker who can shop them for you.
Because I
went to one and it was a nightmare. I was paying like $3,000 a year for insurance, and then we got it down to like $1,500. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it is a dramatic difference. So, I mean, can be some real swings.
I think proper wanted like $8,000 a year.
Yeah.
And I think I'm paying $1,800.
Okay. That's great.
Yeah.
So especially for that house. That's crazy. Yeah.
I did things like I converted the wood fireplaces to gas. I think that helped with my insurance too, right there.
Go ahead.
Well, I just mentioned earlier too, that we bought a place down in Hocking Hills, which is very touristy area close to outside of Columbus, Ohio. And we've only owned it a couple of weeks. And so we haven't even rehabbed it yet. And one of the advantages there for insurance is that the neighbors has a huge pond, and there's just a fence, a small like split rail fence that separates the two properties. And so the fire department was very excited to see that there was a water source there, because this is out in the country in the middle of the woods. And so that helped our insurance rate there.
Yeah.
That's nice.
That's cool. Yeah. There's one question here. Would you recommend writing a business plan for Airbnb? Yeah. I mean, and let me add into that one clarification that I have that's different than Kathy and Cheryl, and that is I have a property manager. So mine is 100% passive. I do nothing. I get a check and an invoice. It's just a breakdown of like, hey, here's what all the costs were and here's your money. And the money automatically goes in my account. And then I do the books on QuickBooks and that's it. So I don't do anything. So I love these conversations because I really don't do anything. And it's the best because I don't fold sheets ever.
Now, Adam, let me ask you, Adam, did you had to set it up though? Originally you had to
kind of. See, here's the thing.
Did you set up the linen? Did you choose the linen and the towels?
No. I have an amazing property manager. His name's Ben Vail and he's with Housepitality and housepitality.io. If you want to go check out his website, he's great. Tell him I sent you. He'll give you the family discount, but he, so basically this is what it was. It was, I knew I wanted to buy a rental property of some kind. I got with my realtor. We originally were going to do long-term and then through I'll tell the whole story in another thing, but basically it was like, hey, maybe if we don't do short-term or if we don't do long-term, but we go to short-term, then we can buy something that's a little bit nicer and a little bit nicer area and make even more money than we would have. And that's exactly what we did. And so I went to my buddy Ben and I said, hey, he runs 100 of these things in Columbus. And I said, how does this work? And he's like, dude, we'll set everything up for you. So literally he sent me a spreadsheet of the furnishings and the stuff that they put in an Airbnb. And he's like, if there's anything you want to take away or add or whatever, we could do it. And they just did it all. So I've been in the house twice in my life. And it was like when I bought it for the final walkthrough. And then I had some friends that we blocked it off for a weekend for them to stay because they were in town for a thing. And I was in, and then I was there then. And it's been awesome. Cause I mean, for me, an investment.
Adam, what do you pay for this property manager?
25%.
Ouch.
Okay.
Oh yeah. I love it though.
Now in Hocking Hills, one of the property managers charges 40%.
Yes.
And you're thinking that's a big chunk, but when you look at what they do, because they even do the light maintenance stuff and they'll do all of the cleaning and they do all of the replacement of anything that's damaged. They do all of that. And you don't even have to do your bookings. They actually have a website and down in Hocking Hills, they actually put you on with all of the other cabins and stuff that they have in the area. And that way, if they get an overflow at another cabin, they just move the guest over to yours. And mm-hmm. So they keep it filled. And so they do get a pretty penny, but there's, again, they're driving in between all these cabins out through the countryside. Nothing's real close right there. They have to drive everywhere down there. And so if you're going to have any cabins down there, everyone says, you know what? You don't want to get a call at 1 a.m. that somebody popped a circuit breaker off because they plugged in too many hair dryers. Have to drive, 3 hours to go pop a circuit breaker on. Just pay the property management company to do that.
Yes. And I mean, I think that's the biggest thing is like, as you develop your career in real estate investing and in really any kind of investing, it's like the most value commodity is your time. Mm-hmm. And it's like, how do you free up as much of that as you can?
Yeah. My cleaner will pop over or enlist your husband or things like that. So,
and that's, yeah. That's, and so, I mean, you got half of it right there. You get the heavy lifting right there taken care of.
So this summer, I mean, there are many ways, like I try to, still stay her favorite. So I give her a $25 bonus every time somebody leaves a review that gives a 5-star on the cleanliness of the house. And then this summer, I gave her a long weekend at the house. Usually in the summer, I rent out like 7 days, 7 nights. It's Saturday to Saturday.
Okay.
If you want to stay at my place, that's what you got to do.
Yeah.
Except for June, the first like 3 weeks of June, because school hasn't truly let out for a lot of people. And some people just can't swing 7 days, you know, or they don't even like going on vacation for that long.
I don't.
So, I know, I don't. Like 4 days, and I'm just
this time. I miss my cat and my computer and
So my June is still, you know, like 3 nights minimum for most of that. But then it's, you know, it's longer. So, but I split part of our time and gave her some time in August, where normally that'd be a 7 night minimum. So, you know, she brought the people that work for her now there, and they had a fun weekend. And then now in December, I was like, you know, I'm having a really good month and I've had a really good year. And Tara, my cleaner, is so key to this. So I gave her 1% of my gross as a Christmas bonus or end of year bonus. So she was bowled over, but you know, this will, it all comes back to you. So
it does, you know, and it's, and I mean, frankly, what you're doing is you're writing little checks to cash big checks.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest thing. Anytime you can write a little check to cash a big check, that's a win. And you're investing in the hardest part of this, which is labor and human capital. And it sounds like you've done a wonderful, wonderful job. So congratulations. That's awesome.
Thank you. So I did something that you mentioned earlier too. I just went and got a HELOC on this property.
Oh, cool. On the rental property.
Yeah. Yeah.
Neat.
Yeah. It, so my appraisal, I think, was really a poor appraisal, because
they all are. They all
everything
suck.
Else was like, like way higher numbers coming back at me. And he compared to some houses that on the same road that sold that had like three bedrooms. And, you know, and I know there's a compensation thing there, but yeah, it just, it was bad, but it still gives me like 68,000.
Yeah.
That I have access to. So,
so what are you going to do next? Are you going to do another destination one, or are you going to do something more utilitarian like Kathy and I have, where it's like people, I mean, mine's in Northern Columbus. Like you're going to the Quarter Horse Congress or the Ohio State Fair and that, you know, or Buckeyes or football, you know?
Yeah.
So, we're going with glamping.
Glamping. So I like cabins. It. Cabins or tents,
and like
or
safari
both.
Tents and cabins and maybe little shed cabins. And so that's our goal. And this is when zoning gets really, really important.
It's
not easy, but we found a property that's 160 acres up north, not far from where I grew up, but it had been a campground. And now I think a family group has used it, and but they're selling it. But parts of that land, and it's so weird because they'll have like 7 acres are commercial and an acre on this, you know, because it's like 440s.
Yeah.
So because the people that own it are in Florida for the winter, and the realtor, the seller's agent, is on vacation right now. We can't see it till the middle of this month. We're hoping to go tomorrow. Yeah, we're hoping that we can change that from, you know, right now it has 8 RV spots that have sewer, electric, and water to them. And it has like 14 tent sites that have water and electric. And then like another 10 that only have one of those. I can't remember which one it is. So, you know, I was looking at like, well, RVs, they can make like $3,000 a month for, you know, people rent. Whereas if I take those little spots and I put in maybe even a little like shed, you know, that I've converted, you know, made a cabin, a glamping cabin, and added hot tubs and that, I can rent that for $200 a night. So from $24,000, I could make, what, $48,000 a month, you know, compared to a whole summer.
We want to put little A-frames on the property that we bought down in Hocking Hills.
Oh,
yeah.
People love that. It's just kind of the way things are going. Before this, we were doing a land contract to get a property just north of Wisconsin Dells, huge tourist area, that had 4 cabins that were just pretty delightful. One was a ship. Ah. Pretty big ship. And one was this little crooked house, you know, it was built to be crooked and crazy, and it had a secret door to go into a bedroom area. And
cool. All this, but
it, oh, I was so excited about it. However, the seller didn't have the zoning right. So this was zoned as residential. And I'm not going to lay down that kind of money.
Right.
When any one of those neighbors could shut you down. So yeah, if you're looking to get into something, be very diligent about that zoning.
Yes.
And I mean, that's another argument for a property manager, because I mean, that guy wants me to succeed as much as I want to succeed. Almost. but you know, they help with all the local ordinances and all the laws and stuff. So like, they remind me, it's like, hey, it's time to get a new permit. And then they tell me all the stuff that I got to get. And then they send it off, and they do everything. So having a good team, hear a lot of people in real estate talk about having a good team. That is 100% true, because it is not a solo sport.
And as people getting into it, you're like, yeah, you keep telling me to have a good team. How am I supposed to have a good team?
You got your lender right here.
Yeah. You find a good lender that understands your focus.
Yeah.
And then I kind of built a team as I went. You know, I found a good cleaner. She knows people in the area. So you're worried about handyman and that. Well, I did a renovation, and a family member is a builder contractor, and he just decided that was going to be part of his job. And I went, okay. So for use of the house for like 10 years, he did tons for me. And also all I paid was cost. But also the company that we had put in the new hot water heaters, I converted from electric hot water heaters to gas, and then put in the gas fireplaces, and you know, put in a mini split so we'd have air conditioning, things like that. That company has all kinds of side shoots of the business. You know, they've got plumbers, and they have electricians, and they supply my LP, and you know, so it might, once you get into it, depending on your area.
Did we lose her?
Yep. We lost your volume,
Cheryl. We lost your volume, Cheryl.
We lost your volume. I don't know if she can hear us or not.
I don't know. This is exciting. I have no idea what's going to happen.
I don't know if she's watching the chat.
It is. Oh, there we go. She sees it.
Yep, she sees it. We don't hear you.
Yay. That's okay.
She thinks her headphones may have stopped working.
Oh, that could be a thing.
Yep. Mine did that to me once.
Yeah.
Nope.
No. Oh, that's okay.
Nope.
So we threw our contact information in the chat.
Yes.
So if anybody wants to get in contact with us, those are the best ways to do it. Cheryl.
She thinks her headset died. Cheryl, can you hear us at all? Yes. I'm not sure if she can hear us either. I think her headset may have died.
Can you hear us? I don't know. Well, yeah. Cause I mean, if her sound was going through her headset, then maybe it might've cause I got a bunch of things on mine. And so anytime I, something changes, then it ends up coming out of a monitor or something weird. And so, anyways, Cheryl, I think, is going to put her contact info in the chat, or not. Never mind. She's not.
Yes.
Nope. Okay.
Yep,
never mind.
Can you hear us? Yep.
Can you hear us? Put your contact in. There it is. Bam. There's her email.
Okay.
Cool.
So anyway, yes. So I just want everybody to know, to visit Cheryl, and that's her email, that she's at tallyhaven.com. Please check out tallyhaven.com. The pictures are wonderful. And there's her phone number. And this can be your team. If you're looking to get into short-term rentals, you have Adam's contact information there. You have my contact information there. And for those of you that don't know, if you're looking at the chat box, If you click down at the bottom where you're going to type a message, where it says everyone, if you click the little three dots clear over to the right, you can just hit save chat, and it will actually save the entire chat in your hard drive. So you can do that if you'd like. You can take a screen print if that works better for you. And if you don't want to do any of that, or you're in the car driving and you're on your phone instead of on a computer, just remember kathybinner.com, and you can go to all the replay, and I will have all the contact information with the replay of this meetup. So just go to kathybinner.com, just scroll down to the free B&B icon, click through on that, and you'll see all our replays. And she says she can't see Cheryl's information. It could be that maybe Cheryl didn't have it out to everyone. Yeah, she just had it to the host and panelists. It's CherylHewitt@gmail.com. And her site is tallyhaven.com. And her phone number is 608-347-9688. And again, I'm going to put back in the chat. At the end of the day, remember kathybinner.com, scroll down to the short-term rentals, the B&Bs, you'll see it there. You'll see my picture with Adam's picture, and click through, and that's where I'll put all the contact information.
Yeah, I was doing the same thing. I was doing it to host and panelists. And
yeah, there's a thing that says to everyone or just to host and panelists. So yeah.
So let me just say real quick, because somebody asked it, should we put it in an LLC? And I said it's a good accountant or lawyer question, but I don't think it you didn't see it. So whoever that was asking about the LLC, contact part of your team, your lawyer and your accountant. See if it's going to be right for you, because I can't tell you that. I can tell you a little bit about the lending that goes along with that. Give me a call if you have questions, and we can get into the details of that. But lawyer, accountant, for sure.
Yes, yes. I personally do not have mine in an LLC because I'm still buying and selling property, and it's a whole lot easier when I'm funding it personally to actually not have my properties into an LLC. But I do have a trust. So, but again, that's an attorney question. Yeah, yeah, that's an attorney question for you. Cheryl's trying to find a headset that works there. Cheryl, maybe, and again, she can't hear me. So let's see, Cheryl, maybe if you unplug your headset
and plug it back in, I think
you can use
the speakers,
the computer.
Yeah. But
Cheryl, well, Carmela says she really enjoyed this. Very informative. Yes, Carmela, thank you for being with
Carmella.
Us.
Thanks, Carmela. Appreciate it. Well, you want to wrap this one up?
Yes, we will. And again, Cheryl, I'm going to, I'll send her an email later, but I am going to just say, Cheryl, thank you so much. Yes, yes. And Terry said she's learned so much. Thank you all. Again, kathybinner.com. The replay will be there. You'll be able to listen to the whole thing, and all the contact information will be there. That's just an easy place to send everyone. It's all right there. kathybinner.com. Scroll down. You'll see my picture with Adams on the free meetup, and just click through there and get the replay. So thank you everyone for coming. Cheryl, thank you. I know she can't hear us, but but thank you for being with us. this was great. And I will, keep in touch with everyone that registered. I will send you a reminder the next time that we're on. And don't forget to go to kathybinner.com and catch the replay and all the contact information. So thank you so much. And we will see you again next month. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Kathy. See ya.